This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Well, good morning, good friends here and all of you out there. See some faces that I know and some that I don't. So welcome one and all. To our talk together. So I brought a few words, and I am very much hoping that you will contribute a few words to our conversation today. So here we are in this beautiful place, amazing place, Jikoji, the land, the place, everything that it carries and holds. And with a break in the storms, I mean, what could be better? We get to enjoy that wonderful after the rain, breathing feeling when all the trees are breathing and we're breathing with them, exchanging breaths. The rain isn't supposed to start, I understand, until later. So maybe even a little walk will be in the program after lunch. So here we are at the beginning of a year on this, it's actually a sacred land. It's been inhabited for approximately 10,000 years. And the Aboriginal people here at the time of the Spanish colonization were known as Ohlone. That was a confederation of small tribes. So there are different tribes in the Ohlone groups. And like in Santa Cruz, it's the Yuvapai Aswas in Santa Cruz, kind of proper where Santa Cruz is now. But they lived all around this land, closer to the coast some, and inland more, like up on these ridges. And they lived mostly at peace, each according to their customs and their understandings and their spiritual guides and their rituals. And like us and people everywhere, they laughed and cried and created ceremonies to mark the seasons and births and deaths. They created beautiful objects for their daily lives, and they also made art for the, because they knew that making art is a sacred activity and uplifts the human spirit. And sometimes, like we do, they got angry and they quarreled, even to the point of war with one another. So I feel at a time of turning, a time of year when it holds the promise of new beginnings and new understandings. When we celebrate our own seasonal turnings, it seems good to me to recall that we are actually part of a long, long story that we call human. And although we in our lives now, in this place, in this culture, in this confederation of tribes, although we create different objects, our essential being is the same as humans have been for as long as we know in history and also even in prehistory. So we are the same as all those who've gone before us, all our forebears. We chanted this morning an acknowledgement of our spiritual forebears in this tradition, and as others in their own traditions do that as well. And we share all the same human story things, the birth and death and joy and sorrow, anger and reverence, as well as most of our genes we share with the early people. or whether they were called, you know, hominids or Cro-Magnons or Neanderthals or, you know, Homo sapiens, it doesn't matter so much. All of that is still part of us. We are connected, as we see, with the genetic work that's being done and has been done for a couple of decades, but more and more we're connected with our ancestors in Ethiopia and, you know, millions of years old in Europe, Indonesia, Australia. So all of that we carry with us, we carry it as individuals, and it goes very deep. So one Buddhist way of expressing this is it goes to beginningless time and continues on. So time is one of our maybe later constructs or creations as a way of understanding the movements of life. And that can be useful and very helpful, especially at these times when things are changing and turning. And so we gather today because in some way we recognize this. And what is it that we recognize? We want to explore this mystery of what being alive is. What it is to be our own selves, individuals, and with all these other individuals that are part of our world, part of our gathering here today, and part of the whole world, 8 billion of us now. We share so much with others, whether we know them or not, our species, and also our relatives, which are our animal relatives. We share so much that sometimes we know without words what others are feeling. I don't believe personally we can ever really know what others are thinking. Sometimes we might have that happen sometimes, but really we're very sensitive to knowing what others are feeling, and as so are many animals, so who we also share a lot of genes with. And we also know in some way, because we're here, that stopping our activities, our day-to-day things that we do, many of which are out of habit and many of which are necessary, we know that stopping that and just simply sitting down and breathing without thinking too much about it could perhaps offer us some insights or some understanding for each of us as individuals into what this mystery is of being alive. Well, and how do we know that? How do we know that about stopping and just slow, stop, sit, still, and see? How do we know that? We might think it's because we heard a podcast or read a book or listened to a friend who is also exploring this aliveness. And those are all proximate causes. Those are all maybe the initiator causes of the deeper cause, which is within us, ourselves, our own intuition. And our curiosity has brought us together today and to share our thoughts and questions and feelings about being alive in this human Buddha body. How to live, how to be at ease, how to be at peace with ourselves and with everything else as well. And we know too, and this is part of this mystery, that we are afraid sometimes, and we can be overwhelmed sometimes by personal circumstances or by the complexity and constant shifting of large forces that are going on all the time in our world. Forces of nature which we're getting a little taste of. The elements, our planets, atmosphere, and geology, and all those dramatic events that can bring to us, earthquakes, tsunamis, volcanic explosions, and on. Mostly those kind of causes aren't in our control. But even when we can and do and have actually seen collectively ways to control or work with, be aware of these natural dramatic forces, we also know that other humans have other ideas about how to live. And some of them don't believe our ways and our ways of looking at things are worth acting on. So there's also that mystery of being alive. So I think we gather because we know most truly that our sense of being alive is much larger than any destructive forces, whether internal or external, whether human or what we call forces of nature. So coming together, it encourages all of us, every single one of us, to trust ourselves and the world more deeply, to see more clearly that we are also part of this long story of this trust, which humans express in different ways. Actually, none of us would be here unless humans had that deep force and continued on through beginningless time. So the form we practice here is Buddha Dharma, and specifically Soto Zen. We're form-making and meaning-making creatures. That's part of our human Buddha nature. And these particular forms are the ones that speak to us, that we find helpful for living within this mystery. There's a very early Buddhist book, a book of poetry called the Dhammapada, which is the Dhammapada is a Pali term for Dhamma, for Dharma. And it means the way of Dharma, Dhammapada, the way of the Dharma. And Shakyamuni Buddha, the Buddha that we honored and paid respect to today with our forms of the historical Buddha, that is, who lived in our time, whose teachings have taken root in many forms around the planet. These verses are attributed to him. He spoke to his followers, his early followers, in the Dhammapada. And in the section of, there are several sections to this collection of poems. In the very first verses is usually translated as, the title is called Choices. And he said, Shakyamuni Buddha, our life is shaped by our mind. We become what we think. Joy follows a kind thought, as our shadow never leaves us. When we hold on to thoughts like, look how he abused me, or insulted me, threw me down, robbed me, we live in hate. When we abandon such thoughts, hatred is abandoned. In this world, hate never yet dispelled hate. Only love dispels hate. This is the law, the Dharma, ancient and inexhaustible. So these are the words in various translations. Because it's such an old poem, there are many translations. But this is the essence of what Shakyamuni Buddha said to said early on, and then that still speaks to all of us. And the love that he speaks of here, from my understanding, it's a profound compassion for all of life, including one's own life. It's not accepting injustice and saying, oh, I'll just love everything. We can't actually do that, of course. And this Dharma isn't letting someone push you around or pushing yourself around. It's more like letting go of our training, our culture's training, that we're separate and alone, and it's him or her and me, and we have to always watch out for ourselves. And in other words, not trusting others or ourselves. Yes, we become angry. Yes, we make mistakes. So this Dharma is not about being perfect. It's about recognizing, becoming aware of the choices we have about our anger, about our unhappiness, about our sadness, about the world, and how to trust that in a profound way, this is the way it is, and we can work with it. We can work with it. Actually, these practices, not often immediately, although sometimes that happens, over time we see ever more clearly how this kind of trust allows us to have more and more choice. And all these emotional states that pass through us, we start to see clearly how they are simply like the storms, the weather, and they pass through us. Sometimes when we see into a difficult emotion, it's almost like this usually happens when we're just facing the wall, and we could almost laugh out loud. It's so quick how the states, what goes through our mind, passes just like the clouds passing or the storms coming down. Sometimes they last for a long time, and yet we still can stay with them. It's funny sometimes. You almost want to laugh out loud. So this is us. This is us, our human Buddha life. Trillions of neurons firing, even when we're relatively quiet. Incalculable forces outside of our own psychophysical spiritual self and being. And choices. We have choices. So Dogen, who is considered the founder in a certain sense of this form of practice, was a very great and very human teacher. And he had a lot of very pithy ways of saying things, and often very mysterious ways to say things. And here in his talk on birth and death, about the mystery of our nature, what it is to be human, and what it is to be a Buddha human, here is what he says. Don't figure it out in your mind. Don't say it in words. Just letting go and forgetting body, mind. Casting them into the house of Buddha. Being activated by Buddha. When we go along in accord with this, without applying effort or expending the mind, we part from birth and death and become Buddhas. Well, I would like to end my speaking with a poem by Derek Walcott. who was originally from Saint Lucia in the Caribbean. His poem is called Love After Love. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at each other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, but who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit, feast on your life. So I thank you very much for your attention, and I look forward to continuing our conversation, your continuing the conversation. Todd.
Shasepta, thank you so much for your talk. I feel the words come from the sitting. It's very refreshing for me. And I'm hopeful for people who have this deep experience, as I think you have, can speak from it as you have. So that's very great. Thank you. Karen.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. I always enjoy your talks, which weave together art and science and the Dharma. And I'm always on the edge of my cushion. Today I really especially appreciated the pointing to that particular Dogen. Maybe you could help me find it again or read the just the beginning, but it occurred to me, it was just like perfect, because what I realize that there's something that comes up when I'm sitting, which is kind of I guess it starts with the feeling, it's sort of a trauma, but even when I'm sitting, I quickly put a story together that kind of packages it up, like it's like my mind takes over and makes the story. Oh, that happened because this and this, you know, and it doesn't seem very open to what's actually happening. And I like the piece that you brought in from Dogen, you know, like cast him into the fire. I can't remember how it started, but it really was talking about the brain getting the mind or the stories that get in the way. And
would you like me to read that again?
Yes, please.
This is actually from The End of Birth and Death, and I don't remember the Japanese title. I think it's number 93 in his collection, or one kind of way of numbering his collection in the Shobogenzo. So don't figure it out in your mind. Don't say it in words. Just letting go and forgetting body and mind, casting them into the house of Buddha, being activated by Buddha. When we go along in accord with this, then without applying effort or expending the mind, we part from birth and death and become Buddhas. Who would linger in mind? So, thank you, Karen. Jane.
Hello, Karen.
Hello, Jane.
Thank you so much for the talk. It's so beautiful, so true. You said the more we trust, the more choices we have. That sentence touched me very deeply, because trusting is so important. And it's such a positive way to become.
Thank you for bringing that in and emphasizing that. It's often like the poet says, we forget that we're our own deepest love in a way. It can get complicated, but if we think about it too much, but if we don't. Thank you. Lovely to see all of you out there, Randy and Nora and Judy, everyone, Judy, Kathy, Jackie, Mark, those I don't know, Nora I do know, Shinzin, Ben. All right, Randy.
Yeah, the poem was interesting. I like that. Something usually poems, you know, swing me back into my own world, and you know, in a way, why I don't overthink the Dharma in a way, but there are times when in life, or even in the busyness of whining and doing stuff, where all of a sudden I'm in front of the mirror brushing my teeth, and for whatever reason, and I go, who is that guy? You know, it's sort of it's like, and doesn't happen all the time, but it's kind of a nice slap in the face, and kind of go, oh my God, this is me, and I'm going through this life and doing this and that, and I have sometimes the same experiences too in the late at night. Occasionally, I can't sleep, and sometimes my pattern is to get a nice glass of brandy, a little bit of some crackers and some cheese. And I'll just sit there and look up, turn the light on lightly and look at the room. And a lot of times that question that comes up is, who am I and what am I doing? And it's kind of a question that there's no judgment about it, but it's just sort of like a big question that just seems to swing around every once in a while, and not all the time, thank goodness. I don't know if I can live with it all the time, but that thing of looking in the mirror and just kind of going, I guess this, what I'm trying to say, it's the path isn't always clear. So maybe that's why I sit. Just to help me deal with that. So I don't know what I'm trying to say, but the poem really it got me moving. I like that. The poem you read. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy, for sharing your experiences. Beautiful and funny. and true. And yeah. We do. That is why we sit. You put your finger on it, because we often don't know, but we trust that this brings us back in some way.
Yeah.
include that we do, that we do know and we can trust. Yeah. Thank you. Doug.
Yeah, thank you for your excellent talk. And two things. One was the comment in what Dogen said had something about how when we release, there's no effort. And Ilana's point about deep trust, seems like there's a real connection between the way opens before us almost effortlessly when there is that deep trust. Can you speak to that?
Thank you for bringing those together, because I too think they're, I mean, just as you said it, I thought, oh yeah, I think that too. I mean, I just had that thought. It's, I guess for me, it's in my personal experience, it's almost like a relinquishment. It's almost that letting go. It's, and he does point to that in the poem, Derek Walcott, about you. There's now another thought occurred to me, or another Zen phrase. It's like we, and also it's kind of a popular phrase. You're just, it feels so good when you stop beating your head against the wall, or when you come to a certain point in practice, it's like beating your head against the iron gate or the iron door, right? You just, what am I doing? And then you just, you give up, a relinquishment in a way. And you, and in a way that's, it's just each one has to trust that they can have that experience, because it's not always easy. I mean, it can be quite painful before you really let it go and relax into it. And as Karen pointed out, the stories we have, we're so habituated to our stories. We're story-making people. We love stories. That's how kind of we make sense of the world in a way, but we kind of latch onto them as being a kind of reality. And Dogen is pointing to, I think, in all the great Buddhist teachers and Shakyamuni Buddha, that no, they don't have such a reality. We're just kind of making this up. So that you get to that effortless, sometimes it takes really letting go, deep letting go. And effortless. And there's no need to rush it. You have your whole life, however long that is. Each moment is a moment when that can happen and does happen. Many, many people have been following this path or these paths. Thank you, Doug. Oh, yes, everyone. Did I mention? I didn't mention John or Beverly. Yeah, everyone's here.
Carolyn, I'll introduce my niece, Anita.
Oh.
Joining us from Boulder.
welcome, Anita.
My brother. It's been really wonderful. It was a great morning. And it was interesting, during your talk, you brought up just our friends, our animal friends. And I'm sitting here with two little doggies that I'm house sitting for. And I've had an interesting couple of days, because usually I find myself around cats. I'm more of a cat person, and I have a kitten myself, and it's been an interesting time to spend with other creature and how they interact on an emotional level. And I was just relating to that piece of your talk and lots of other things. It seemed to really, I think it's funny how things are brought into our consciousness around the same time. You know, I think that your talk really highlighted a couple of things that I've been thinking about or that have been present in my reality recently. And I just think it's humorous how those things tend to line up. And I think I was going to say about the stories that was interesting that Karin also brought up, that I recently heard this thing that, and it's been prevalent recently because there's been a lot of ice in Boulder. And so you notice it whenever you maybe like trip on stairs or almost slip on ice. I heard this thing that your body goes through a full cycle of like stress and then relief. And it's, you often feel it like if you catch yourself before you fall, that like instant of, you almost go through a full recovery in that instant where you are, you find stress and then you find relief of not falling. And recently I've been thinking about that at an emotional level. I was curious if we have the same instinct with like our feelings and our emotions to try and almost close off the issue with a story. And was brought up by my aunt when Karin mentioned that about the stories, or how we fill in gaps in our world. And that's just what I had been, that's just what came up for me during that. I thought that was an interesting piece that I'd been thinking about.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Jackie.
I also want to thank you for this talk. It's really spoken to where I am right now, which is a kind of a dissolution, almost like being inside of a pupa case. You know how butterflies, they just liquefy. And so that notion of having deep trust is very, very helpful to me right now. And there's a lot of letting go of words and turning to music, which has been very different and really supportive for me. And yet there's a whole bunch of guilt that I feel coming up in that I should be doing something more useful than giving myself all this time to do all this letting go. And where is it all going to go? And anxiety's coming. So I don't really have anything to say other than I really am thankful for this talk and that poem by Derek Walcott, which seems to support me in what I'm doing and to trust myself. So thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. What you said about feeling guilty about giving yourself time to just really be human and to let go. It reminded me of, I believe it's the Catholic philosopher and priest of the Teilhard Chardin, who said, you know, the world would be a much better place if men sat quietly in a chair for a period every day. So something like that. That's what we do. Klaus.
Thank you for your talk. I got a lot of inspiration out of it. What really resonated with me when you responded to Doug, how he made this feeling of letting go. And I feel fortunate I get this feeling when I meditate or when I with people, great people like you around me. Where I struggle with how to take it out to the busy life, right? How to take it out with obligations from work, family, raising kids. Any, could you speak to that?
Well, thank you for bringing that in, because of course, that's the world we live in. And this is very definitely a lay practice center here. It's not that we're doing withdrawing practice. We're seeing that's our life. It is our life, and that's really the pedal to the metal there. You know, it is like, or the metal to the pedal. How does it go? The metal to the pedal. Sorry. And there's, it's just really more trust and more sitting, and then things do. They're difficult people. I have moments of difficult people, and then what am I going to do with that when I get angry, or with even people I'm close to? You know, like, she's doing that again, or she's doing that again. But that's then I can see that that's me, and I have a choice. And what good does it do me? I'm just really not trusting myself that I can meet that person in a compassionate way. But it is difficult. We're hardwired to have certain kinds of responses to aggression, of even subtle kinds. And so that's where patience comes in, and keeping at it, patience and perseverance. You just devote what time you can and what time serves you to keeping a steady awareness. And even in the moments of your life, you can carry the sense of zazen, seated meditation, and qinyin, walking, whenever you walk, and whenever you stand, wherever you are, you can tune in, you can remember, you can make a little practice to remember. Oh, and maybe that helps sometimes, but I know work situations are difficult, and family life too can be difficult. Also, I found it helpful not to just remember we're all in this. He too, or she too, is just another human being who has these feelings, just like my feelings. So that's one reason why the mirror images speak so much to us, I think, because in a way, that person who's angry at you, or it's just you know those feelings. We all have them, and then the compassion arises because you see that in that moment. So there's no prescription, but maybe that was something. Thank you.
On that part about difficulty, it's really important. When in the sitting, for example, my body just gives me a lot of uncomfort at times. And in some ways, though, it is deepens my sitting by, as you use the word, let go, or to be with it in a unique way, I suppose, where I'm not knee-jerk reaction from it, and I'm not being like my old gymnast tightness, and I'm actually staying and recognizing, as many have said, how fleeting it can be. There's no guarantee. So it seems like the, you know, the First Noble Truth is really important, and it's inescapable. If you're in a monastery, you're going to be, like I said, in the unique times I get to be able to sit here on Sundays, life is, with a dukkha, it's uncomfortable. So this is where we, the sitting meets, and how deepening of the practice is suffering, and how important in some ways that it can be.
Thank you. I have found that too, that the that with pain, I had a friend years ago, he said there's nothing like knee pain, in a sense of not being masochistic, but in the sense you're bringing up, Todd. Thank you for how you can see that these are just sensations, and we have choices to, we don't have to tell that story, you know, that's developing equanimity and being with, Shakyamuni Buddha pointed at very clearly, there's, life is suffering. It's like all the rest, all the other truths or noble truths are how we do have choices, and including the third one, it's like, that's liberation. That's like, being for what Dogen says, you know, just letting it go. Of course, that's not easy to do. So then we also have a culture that wants everything and wants it now, you know. So that's another part about the patience. And,
one last thing was, sure, that you can get up. I can get up from my cushion and walk out. And
you can.
Perfectly seems, or somebody I'm in an argument with or whatever, I can say, I have to go now. I don't have to be with this suffering, right? I have a choice, as you said. I can go suffer someplace else in traffic or something. Anyway.
You do, even, yes, if there are, that's trusting yourself enough to know that you can just, whatever the conventions, whatever, however other people might think, he's getting up in the middle of sitting, and, you know, but you have to trust. Thank you. Ilana?
In regard to throwing the stories to the fire, I find it very interesting that it says throw the story to the fire, not throw the story. Because when you put something in fire, it creates light and heat and warmth.
Mm-hmm.
And so to look at our stories as a resource for enlightenment, it's putting them in the fire with the sense of a letting go that is compassionate for the story.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me that the fire is something that enlightens us. And so putting together the story and the fire meant a lot to me. Thank you so much.
Sometimes you, I'm not sure I can actually address that, but sometimes you do, from a from a true place, you just know you have to stand up and say to this person, no, get off. Especially that happens, and it's happened to me and to a lot of people I know, when they see someone being aggressive towards someone else and just intervene. You just know that that's the right thing to do. So you can't, or, you know, even to oneself, even if someone's toward you. Most of us are fortunate enough not to have had that, but it can happen. And I guess that the letting go would be, then that's over. You know, you've done that, and then you see someone's pushing somebody around, or I've seen people mistreating their dogs or something, and I just have to say something. And but the letting go is like compassionate, I guess that would be. And then when it's over, it's over. For knowing with some sense of feeling, and all of this usually they're situational, so it's hard to talk specifically because they depend on what's coming up in that moment. But and it happens very quickly. But you know, you feel really clear that you're doing it, and you're doing it the right way, and then it's over. And so instead of telling stories to your friends or to yourself, which is often you repeat, oh, that was so great, I stopped that, I did that, I did, you know, you just let it go so that something else can arise, hopefully something you don't have to be really. So I hope that touched on what your very deep question was, how to put those together. That's a koan for all of us. And I heard a bell, which means the next koan is lunch. So, but we will do a little dedication here at the end.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.